name is Solomon Northup. I'm a free man.
And you have no right whatsoever to detain me.
You're no free man. You're nothing but a Georgia runaway.
That's a clip from Best Picture nominee 12 Years a Slave. While many black films have earned significant praise this year, 12 Years a Slave is enjoying an entirely different level of success. The film, besides its success at the box office and among the critics, will join the ranks of classroom tools to teach children about the realities of slavery. Coming up, we'll hear from the African American Film Critics Association. Joining me now is Chair of the African American and African Studies Department at Ohio State University, Dr. Horace Newsome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Could we first talk about what we mean by black film and perhaps how that concept has changed or not over time?
Well, some would say that black films are films produced and directed by black filmmakers. But I think when we use that term, we're actually thinking much more broadly than that. So we're talking about films where black people are rather prominent, you know, in the narrative. In the early days, they were called race films.
Back in the 19 teens.
Yeah, they were called race films, and these were films made in Hollywood with black casts. You know, main characters would be black, and oftentimes they were thought of as mainstream films that were in competition with the black filmmakers, because there were black filmmakers at the early part of the 20th century. The most famous would be Oscar Michaud, who in a 40-year period, I think, produced 30 films. 10 of those films are still in existence. In fact, Ohio State actually has all 10 of the films that survived. They, were preserved at the Library of Congress, or at the Smithsonian, I forget which one. Mm-hmm. But I would say a lot of major universities probably have copies of those 10 films by Oscar Michaud. Oscar Michaud provided black people in the entertainment business, in the theater, and in the movie making business, an opportunity to work. So he created his films in ways that allowed dancers or singers to find a spot to do their talent and make money. So the race films, as I mentioned earlier, which were the Hollywood films, competed with the Michaud films and oftentimes, you know, were much more popular than the Michaud films, because the outlets were there for them. They could take advantage of the distributors who they used, you know, anyway for other films, not simply the race films. So certainly they could, impact more audiences than Michaud did. But Michaud was a force, and I don't want to, you know, understate his importance in terms of black film. He's like referred to as the father of black film.
Okay. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about black film this hour. There's some impressive records being set this year by some scores, and by others, maybe it's not so impressive. What do you make of, I shouldn't say this year, I should say 2013. What do you make of the offerings in 2013 in the black film category? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. 614-292-8513. With me right now, Dr. Horace Newsome. He is chair of the Department of African American and African Studies at OSU.
I wanted to do a little shout out for someone.
Okay.
Because there's actually a Michaud scholar in Columbus, retired from Ohio State, and that's K'Ron Green.
Okay.
All right. I actually use his book to talk about Michaud in my film class. So I just wanted to say that about him.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about him and his art versus that of Hollywood's race films. Mm-hmm. How is, to the naked eye, to the average filmgoer, how would the films be different from each other?
Yeah. Well, I think...
besides the distribution and all of that.
I think that the race films created by Hollywood perpetuated negative stereotypes of black people. Michaud's films problematized those stereotypes.
They problematized them.
What I mean is he approached those stereotypes in a complicated way that exposed them as stereotypes. But also challenge this dominant representation of black people. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
The tragic mulatto character is a character that we see in Hollywood film, in early Hollywood film. She is loathing. She has an internal struggle about herself, about her mixed race heritage, and she really rejects the black part.
Is this sort of like Imitation of Life, Lana Turner?
Okay. Would be a very good example.
Okay.
So you take Oscar Michaud's God's Stepchildren, a film that features the tragic mulatto character, right? But Michaud doesn't make her glamorous. She's loathing, but people around her are rather critical of that part of her character. She's mischief. She's mean-spirited. So Michaud is creating the tragic mulatto that you should not like. He's not giving you the tragic mulatto that you say, oh, poor Priscilla.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Piccola. Poor Sarah Jane. These are the characters in Imitation of Life, Piccola being the first Imitation of Life that was done in 1933, okay. And Sarah Jane, the second Imitation of Life that was done in 1959. But we cry over these two characters, Piola and Sarah Jane. We don't cry over Naomi. We don't like her. So Michaud is really undoing that stereotype. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We're talking about this today because it's been called a breakout year. 2013 was called a breakout year for black film, but there have been other notable stages in cinematic history that were turning points for black filmmakers, producers, directors, and actors. And you mentioned Oscar Michaud as one of those people that the black film, one of the steps in the step stool, I suppose, for black film.
Yeah.
Tell us about some others.
Well, if you talk about more contemporary artists, I think that someone like Spike Lee represents a real break, right? He's not the only one, you know. There's Charles Barnett and there's Julie Dash. So there are other contemporary filmmakers who have really made a difference in terms of pushing back against the stereotypes, bringing more dignified roles to the screen. I wanted to share with you another example of how we kind of undo the stereotypes. Julie Dash has a film called Illusions. Now, she's a black filmmaker. She's really well known for her film, Daughters of the Dust.
Okay.
You may have heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But Illusions is a short film. And it's about the tragic mulatto character again. But this tragic mulatto is not running from blackness. She's engaged to a black soldier, right? So she's not looking for Mr. Right in the white world, which is what the tragic mulatto often does. But she has a black soldier as her fiance. She's working in Hollywood as a producer.
So irony there.
Yes, as a producer. Right? Now, she's assumed to be white. And she doesn't say what she is. But the things she does in trying to facilitate the promotion of black people in the industry in very, you know, small parts, you know, sometimes as the backup of voice of the what we call the kind of a voice that's dubbed, you know,
okay,
that you might have a white actress singing, but the voice is of a black artist, right? The character, the main character, would try to assist that black artist, make sure that she's paid, make sure that she's treated well while she's in the studio. So this, excuse me, so this tragic mulatto, I don't call it a tragic, I call it the triumphant mulatto, is really acting in ways that are totally different from the way we imagine the tragic mulatto that comes out of Hollywood. She is being a facilitator for black people. She is not denying her blackness.
A short film, though, that most of us will never see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a short film. It's a short film. It's one of those, you know, artsy films.
How much has the, dare I say, resurgence or reinvigoration of the art cinema in the United States helped black filmmakers in this day and age?
Because I think that that's where they end up. They end up at what we would know as the Drexel.
Well, that's where a lot of experimental filmmakers start anyway.
Yes. But it's interesting that Spike Lee, who did several films, most of his films have actually been the arts, films. You know, they end up in the kind of artsy theaters. There's one that he did called Inside Man, right? Mm-hmm. Which was actually a box office film.
Right.
With Denzel Washington.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So, go figure. But look at how long it took. I mean, that film probably came out in the 2000s. Again, Spike Lee has done so many films, and that's the only one I can mention right now. Well, that was a, you know, in the major theaters.
Well, Do the Right Thing.
Do the Right Thing
was his breakout.
Was
wasn't
his breakout
it?
Movie
in the mainstream?
And I think I saw it at the Drexel, but
okay.
I'm not sure.
All right, I don't. Yeah.
But you know, I kind of think that maybe Do the Right Thing may have been shown at some of the mainstream theaters, but I don't know how long it was shown. You know. What happens with some of these films, and maybe Do the Right Thing is a good example, is they may go to the mainstream theaters, but they may only be there for a week or two, you know. But
well, people certainly talked about that film.
Oh, yes, yes. But let me say this. It's talked about a lot because it is still playing. You know, my son, his generation, he's 36, loves that film. So they watch Spike Lee films. So each generation somehow discovers Spike Lee and keeps him current that way. Even his older films remain current in the sense that each generation, younger generations of particularly African-American youth discover his films and like them.
My guest is Dr. Horace Newsome. He's chair of the Department of African American and African Studies at OSU. We're talking about black film today. Coming up, we're going to hear from the president of the African American Film Critics Association. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
You know he got that job himself. The White House called him. He didn't call the White House.
I want to hear all the stories.
I don't know how many stories you're going to hear because they done swore him to some kind of secret code.
That's from the 2013 film Lee Daniels, The Butler, starring Forest Whitaker and, as you heard, Oprah Winfrey there. Along with a majority of the black films of 2013, it was passed over for any Oscar nominations. Not so 12 Years a Slave, however, which is up for a whopping 11 Oscar nominations, a big number by any measure. While some say the films of 2013 broke through a long-standing wall in the film industry, others point to a lack of nominations as proof that Black films remain at most secondary in the film industry. Still with us is Dr. Horace Newsome. He's director of the OSU Department of African American and African Studies. And also joining us now with a film critic's point of view is the president of the African American Film Critics Association, Gil Robertson. Welcome to the show, Gil.
Thank you so much, Anne. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. The Black films that did especially well this year, at least critically, 12 Years, A Slave, Mandela, Fruitvale, Lee Daniels, The Butler, revolve largely around the suffering of American Blacks. So they were enjoyed critically but panned by others for focusing too predictably on suffering. Can you talk about that conflict?
You know, there's certainly a lot being made of the fact that 2013, you know, there were a lot of films that explored the history, you know, of American history and the, you know, from the Civil Rights era to slavery. And you know, I think it provided an opportunity for, you know, those stories to receive a new platform and also for actors to, you know, really get the opportunity to exercise their craft. I mean, it's no secret that a great many of the films, Black films, that is, that are released annually, are typically comedies or, you know, dealing with lighter, you know, subject matters. So, you know, I mean, it just depends on how you choose to look at it. I think that, you know, the body of work that was released during the last 12 months, you know, offered some very insightful opportunities for Americans to become, to expand their understanding of their own story, of the American story.
Yeah, Horace.
Yeah, you know, history is not kind. And that's particularly true of American history. And a lot of these films, as it has been said, were historical films. And they capture an experience in America that is difficult to talk about. You know, Fruitvale is difficult to talk about. It's as difficult to talk about as 12 Years a Slave. But this is the American experience. And it's not always pretty, so I think it's unfortunate that people feel the way they feel about the predictable suffering. But I'm glad because it really will help us have the kind of conversation we may need to have.
I was interested to go ahead, Gil.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the goal for, you know, 12 Years a Slave is very much, you know, is very similar to what folks believe would happen when Obama was elected, that it would finally lead to a very transparent, honest dialogue about, you know, the subject of race and the subject of slavery and how that still impacts us today. And hopefully, you know, if the film should win Best Picture, which I believe it will on Sunday, it'll open up that dialogue and allow people to really, you know, discuss the issues that have been troubling all of us to some degree and hopefully move beyond them.
It will open up conversations just like this one, but will it end the conversation in and of itself? One critic noted that we don't say there are too many Westerns, or we don't say there are too many science fiction films out there. There are as many notes in the song of slavery and the story that it tells as there are in anything. How could we ever stop learning about it? Gil Robertson, I mean, is there ever going to be too much?
You know, I don't. Just as, you know, you see a constant, you know, reference to the Holocaust or to,
right,
you know, what happened during that window of time in movies throughout the year. I think it's important that we, you know, that we keep our past, you know, close to our hearts, because that will ensure that we don't repeat those mistakes. But I do agree with the criticism that Hollywood certainly could expand, you know, their creative thinking to produce and distribute, you know, films that show a greater window of the African-American experience. And hopefully, given the fact that these films have performed well, although not likely, you know, maybe there'll be some enterprising studio that will take that chance. Last year did see the success of a Will Packer Rainforest produced film called Think Like a Man, and there's a sequel coming out, which, you know, was basically a comedy, but it was a well-directed, a well-constructed film that made a lot of money at the box office, and it really didn't play on stereotypes. It just sort of offered examples of, you know, people that are relatable, you know, in their quest for love. So, you know, if that second film is successful, then that'll probably lead to similar, you know, opportunities.
Right. Think Like a Man is about some, I think they're husbands or boyfriends of women who are conniving and manipulating behind their backs. They find out and they respond. It could be any race, anything.
Exactly.
You know, unfortunately, our palates have been set in such a way that it is difficult for us to appreciate films that really depict black people in more realistic, everyday ways. I'm thinking about a film that wasn't a Hollywood film. It wasn't popular in any way. A Charles Burnett film.
To Sleep with Anger.
I can't remember that.
And the characters are people that you know. They're the people who live on your street. But even black audiences have difficulty, you know, with that film in terms of it doesn't have the comedy, it doesn't have the violence, it doesn't have the sex, you know, it doesn't have the things that Hollywood has kind of
conditioned us
mm-hmm. to expect.
And that's very true.
So I think we're going to have to work at trying to get people to appreciate films differently. Yeah.
Gil Robertson. Well, first of all, everyone, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Gil Robertson, I saw a statistic that there's not a proportional number of African Americans or blacks in the United States who go to the theater versus, say, Latinos, where Hispanics, where there's larger percentage than the proportionately go to the film. What does the market have to do with how the movies are made, how they're distributed, and how we're able to appreciate them?
Well, blacks do over-index in terms of their attending film as well as watching television. Studios still seem to be find it difficult to, you know, come up with a plan to effectively deliver their messages to the African American community, and I'm not really sure what that's all about. But you know, they are making efforts to move forward. I mean, this year you've seen some great sea changes, you know, in the Hollywood community. For example, Cheryl Boone Isaacs is now the president of the Motion Pictures Academy, the first African American in that position, and the third woman. Paris Barkley is also the first president of the DGA, African American and gay. So, I mean, you know, you are seeing some sea changes, and hopefully that will lead to, you know, further, you know, to better collaborations in terms of getting these films out into the marketplace.
If you have a question or comment out there, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about black film, the era of black film, contemporary, past, future. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Horace Newsom, do you want to say something?
No.
Okay.
No.
How do they choose which movies win the award, Gil Robertson? Can you go over what the process is to that?
Well, you know, our organization actually produces an annual event that's very similar to the Golden Globes or the Academy. It's a dinner ceremony. And what happens is each studio has an awards department, and they have films that they believe are strong enough to be considered by groups like my own to win, you know, Best Dub Awards. And so they will send out screeners, which are, you know, like DVDs to members of guilds and associations and academies, and they will ask the members to review them and to, you know, it goes through a vetting process, and then ultimately, you know, a decision is made as far as what film, you know, comes out on top or what performance comes out on top. Now, the studios do direct you to the actors or to the elements that they want you to consider. So, for example, if you received a screener from the Weinstein Company on Lee Daniels, the butler, they're very specific in saying that we're putting Oprah Winfrey up for your consideration in the Best Supporting Actress category.
So, Gil, is the Black Programming Consortium still operating, and do they still give the Prize Pieces Award?
Is the Black Consortium still operating?
Black Program Consortium. Did you?
You know, I believe they are. I'm not really, you know, we've made an effort, you know, several of our team members have made efforts to reach out to them, but sadly, you know, we've been unable to connect. So if someone associated with that consortium is listening, definitely look us up via our website.
What is that, Horace?
Well, it was a consortium that used to be based in Columbus. I think they moved to New York or D.C. I'm not sure where they are now. But it was founded by Mabel Haddock. It is a repository of film and video by African and African descendant filmmakers and artists. I, you know, interacted with the group a lot in the late 80s, early 90s when they were here in Columbus, Ohio.
Susan in Columbus.
Yeah, certainly.
Okay, go ahead, Gil.
I certainly heard of them as well, and it's a consortium of African-American owned or themed, you know, radio shows that deal with, you know, critical issues that are affecting the community. And I do believe that they, you know, as with most radio stations, they face their fair share of challenges. I do believe that there's still some operating members, although I'm not really sure how active they are today. But again, we would be eager to work with them if they choose to reach out to us.
Susan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Hi. My name is Susan Helpern, and I run the Columbus International Film and Video Festival here in Columbus.
Hi.
And hi. We are always looking for material. We are always looking for material by Black filmmakers, and it is difficult. And the one thing I've noticed, and what I wanted to speak briefly about, and this is true of the entire field, not just African American makers, but there's been a huge shift, of course, to television, and there's been a large number of African American writers, producers, directors, and actors that are now working in television. And maybe I wanted some folks to address that. For instance, there's several amazing shows right now. There's Sleepy Hollow on Fox, which has a Black female lead. There's Scandal. There's Grey's Anatomy, of course. And there seems to be a sort of easier transition for Black makers in television today. And again, it's part of a larger picture that feature film, theatrical release stuff is having. And that's something I've noticed running a film festival in general. And there's a sort of blurring of lines. And I don't know whether it started with the last big writer strike or if there are, I mean, I'm sure there's many, many, many reasons that that shift is occurring. So I was wondering what
technology has really, technology has really played a strong role in sort of the blurring of the lines with regards to, you know, entertainment content. And nowadays, if you start, I know when I do lectures, I'm often surprised to see that most college-age students, in fact, consume most of their entertainment via their phones. And so because of things like Hulu, because of things like YouTube, because of things like Netflix, the way that we consume entertainment is becoming very different. But at the same time, it's also creating additional opportunities for enterprising and creative filmmakers, regardless of race, of course. As far as your point with regards to television, sure. I mean, there have been some incredible gains with regards to, you know, Kerry Washington being the first African-American lead, you know, in a long-form program in about 20 or 30 years with her role in Scandal. But at the same time, you've sort of seen some backtracking, because if you look at the TV landscape today, very few shows are like 100% black. You know, I'm old enough to still remember a period where you would have complete blocks on any given day where all the TV sitcoms were, you know, were black sitcoms, meaning they were from showrunner to cast, you know, all of the cast, everything was black. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is certainly, you know, up for debate. I mean, what one can certainly say is that TV has become a lot more integrated and a lot more reflective of the country that we live in, which is a good thing.
I'm
pretty quickly, too, because of the change in technology.
Yeah, I'm wondering how the fact that a lot of films are going straight to DVD, or they're going to, you know, are they being done for on demand, or they're being done for Showtime or HBO. In other words, they're bypassing the theater. So I'm wondering if that is going to also have an effect on black filmmakers and how they, you know, proceed from this point.
Yeah, you know, it's already happening. I mean, it takes a lot of money to, you know, to four-wall a picture. And because of that expense, even the major studio houses are beginning to pull back. And, you know, outside of their big tentpole films like, you know, say Spider-Man or Avatar, you know, they're starting to, you know, reduce the number of films that they'll release each year. So you're going to see a lot more of a lot more activity in the independent space. You're going to see more activity, you know, via direct TV, via cable, via, you know, Hulu or Netflix or whatever else is invented, you know, next. So, yeah, we're up for some big changes in the near future.
Susan Halperin, thanks for listening. We appreciate your call. Gil Robertson, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was a privilege. And certainly to Susan, if you have any information about your film festival, definitely, you know, go to our website and send it to us, and we'd be happy to include it in our newsletter. Our organization also produces a very interesting panel opportunity that lets filmmakers know the benefits that they can receive from people like us, from film critics. So definitely go to www.aafca.com for more information. Thank you, and I hope you guys watch the Oscars on Sunday.
Say, Gil, any predictions? You already predicted for 12 Years a Slave. Any others?
You know, I think that Alfonso Cuarón is going to win Best Director. I know that Jared Leto is going to win for Dallas Buyers Club.
He's wonderful, yeah.
Absolute amazing performance.
Yeah.
I think that Lupita Nyong'o is going to pull out and win in Best Supporting category for Actress. I think that Matthew McConaughey is going to win for Best Actor.
Wow, Dallas Buyers Club is going to do well then.
Yeah, and I think that Kate Blanchett will win for Blue Jasmine.
Okay. Well, it was a lot of fun having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Gil Robertson, he's president of the African American Film Critics Association. Coming up, Dr. Horace Newsom of the African American and African Studies Department at OSU will continue his conversation with me. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you. try to ignore those people. Or you can feel sorry for them and for their prejudices and their bigotry and their blind hatreds and stupid fears. But where necessary, you'll just have to cling tight to each other.
That's Spencer Tracy, and guess who's coming to dinner delivering his now famous speech to his daughter and her fiancé, played by Sidney Poitier. The film won Academy Awards for Best Actress and, I believe, Best Film that year. It was a smash at the box office, making 1967 a big year for black film. Certainly 2013 may have been a big year for black films, but film focused on African Americans is hardly novel. Here to talk about the movies that helped get us here to where we are now is Ohio State University Professor Horace Newsome. He is the head or the chair of the Department of African American and African Studies at OSU. Once again, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. You know, that clip reminded me that Guess Who's Coming to Dinner is the first film that, you know, gives us the interracial, well, the first kiss of, you know, an interracial couple. And you know, I also think about, like, the Love case in Virginia, you know, you know, the case that made it legal for people of different races to marry. In that state and in other places, it was forbidden for blacks and whites to marry. So Guess Who's Coming to Dinner is really a timely piece.
It was a shocking piece at the time?
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yes, yes, yes.
What did you make of it at the time?
You know, I think I was probably more dumbfounded, you know, because even if you had seen black people on TV or at the theater, which all of us had by, you know, 67, but to have a movie about an interracial relationship.
About an issue
like that,
yeah.
You know, was really different, you know. It was the kind of movie that actually attracted an audience without having to have the violence and the comedy and all the other things that we seem to look for. So I think it was probably successful for that reason as well.
It was, you know, not non-threatening.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was sort of like a fairy tale too.
Yes, yes. That's an interesting kind of combination. To be like a fantasy, like this can't be true, but at the same time quite controversial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had that mix, that duality about it.
Kevin in Cleveland, you're on the air. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
What, you had a question?
Yes. Just based on, you know, the last a couple of times that blacks have been up for awards and everything, you know, a lot of the African American community is very concerned that they tend to award them for the parts that they degrade themselves. You know, like Monsters Ball with Halle Berry and Denzel playing the villain in that King Kong Has Nothing on Me movie. I forget what it was called.
Cause I thought Training that Day, I think.
Training Day, right. I thought the better movie that year was John Q by far, but that played him as a, you know, a concerned father and everything. So I just wanted to speak on that.
That's interesting. Yeah, Training Day, Denzel Washington was a horrible person.
Denzel was a brute in Training Day. And the brute is one of the traditional stereotypes that grew out of, you know, 19th century theater.
Either you're the victim or you're the brute.
Yes, yes. And you know, the first brute was a character named Gus. Well, the first really popular brute. There were others. But the 1915 film, Birth of a Nation, popularized the brute in the character of Gus, a black Union soldier who asked a young white girl for a hand in marriage. And she refuses him, but she also runs away. You may have remember this scene, and he chases her. And she gets to a cliff, and rather than be, you know, involved with this man, she jumps off the cliff. Now, that scene definitely incited a lot of riots and lynchings. Birth of a Nation was the kind of film that was so difficult.
Oh, in Birth of a Nation, right? Yeah. Yes, okay.
That a lot of mass would not even allow it to be shown in their towns because it would cause so much social unrest. But Denzel is, you know, an extension of Gus. He's an extension of that brute character in Training Days, and that is the character for which he gets his Oscar. And that is disturbing. And as the gentleman said, the same is true with Halle Berry.
What a complex character, yeah, though, in Monsters Ball.
In Monsters Ball, yeah.
Yeah. Kevin, thanks so much for that call. Really appreciate it. Travis in Clintonville, you're on the air with Dr. Horace Newsom at OSU's Department of African American and African Studies. Hi.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to echo something that Dr. Newsom talked about earlier about how we are, we get very little movies or even TV shows about regular black folk. It seems like a lot of movies are made that speak to the lives of, most of the movies are about, we get very few black movies, but most of the black movies are made about the lives of young professionals, and that's a part of black life, but that's not the majority of black folk. You see shows, I'm reminded of the TV show Rock in the 1990s. That was a show about, you know, regular working class black family.
That's right.
I'd like to see some movies about that, along with professionals. You know, and it doesn't all have to be positive. Going back to the previous call, I think that we sometimes get into this respectability politics argument in the black community, that it's all right to tell, you know, that there are some pathologies in the African-American community that are real, and it's all right to show those in popular culture. Mm-hmm. But we also need to show positive aspects of life also. Yeah. So it's not either-or context. And finally, I'd like to say that there's a lot of really great things happening, like on Netflix and on YouTube and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. And as the previous guest, the film critic, talked about, technology has changed the film industry and the TV industry to a large respect also. And if people would need to look at like Netflix and other on-demand video businesses and YouTube, and you'll see some really great things that are happening on those avenues also. So thank you.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you.
Part of it is just the industry, the television as a whole, it seems to me, moved away from that blue collar thing, regardless of the race.
Yes,
it's just not in anymore now.
Yes, it seems to be the case. That seems to be the case.
So usually it's trying to fit in that everyday sort of depiction into whatever genre or thematic overlord
I think what Hollywood does best is it glamorizes, mm-hmm, right? And it's not simply that the white filmmakers have this issue. I think we see a lot of it in Tyler Perry,
his comedies.
His comedies, mm-hmm, you know, but also his comedies deal with common everyday people in a comedic way. But even his other films do what the young man just said. They concentrate heavily on the upward mobile black, you know. I think that we have to have that kind of balance in terms of the class representations of black people in television and in film.
Lawrence in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi. First, I wanted to tell Horace that he was great on film himself. I don't know if you guys have talked about the program on WOSU, the reading from the Birmingham jail, but I can tell you that if you want to talk about quality filmmaking, if that's what it's called, filmmaking,
mm-hmm,
it happened here in Columbus, and the point I'm trying to make is that it talked about recent history and the controversy surrounding the status of black folks now, and I was stunned that it did what it did, and that was explained why turbulence and controversy and tension and all of that was still relevant in our lifetimes and why it's still relevant today. And I wonder what Dr. Newsom felt about not only his participation, but the effort itself to bring that kind of realism to the table.
Yeah. Thank you, Lawrence. It was really a timely documentary film by Jamal Bell, who is in the Curran Institute on Race and Ethnicity at Ohio State. And the reading of the letter from Birmingham Jail really celebrates the 50th anniversary of Martin King's incarceration in the Birmingham Jail in 1963.
He actually wrote a letter
on a
newspaper.
Yeah, he wrote a letter. And what happens in the documentary that Lawrence was referring to is that Ohioans, people from the business community, people from the academic community, people from various walks of life, read portions of that letter. And Lawrence, I thought it was a great idea. I think that Jamal Bell really handled that project well. And I'm glad to be a part of it.
Why? What is the effect? What is the impression from reading something aloud like that? What happens when people do that?
Well, for a moment, you channel the person you're reading. I mean, it gave us all the opportunity to channel King, to actually use his words and try to feel what he felt when he wrote those words. That's what it did for me. I found it difficult to read and perform it well. Hmm. But I think what helped me was I knew I was reading the words of Martin King, and given the kind of orator he was and the kind of writer he was, I knew I had to rise to the occasion. But it was one of the difficult things that I've done, is reading from a script while trying to pretend not to be reading.
Once again, that letter by Martin Luther King Jr. was written on the margins of a newspaper in the Birmingham jail.
Yes.
From his head alone.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
And it takes like 57 minutes to read the whole letter. So imagine, just the length of the letter and the content, the intensity of that content.
Once again, another example of there's so many stories out there.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell a story just about that letter and how it came about.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many stories out there. There's a million Westerns.
You know, it's interesting.
I don't know.
Are there awards for documentaries at the Oscars?
Oh, I think there are.
Okay.
I think there are. I guess we'll find out Sunday night.
Yeah.
Good question. Lawrence, thank you so much for that call. Dr. Horace Newsom, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a delight.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Horace Newsom, he's chair of the Department of African American and African Studies at Ohio State University. Thanks to the All Sides staff, especially Jocelyn Smallwood, who produced this show and who will be leaving us this week. Jocelyn, you will be missed. Producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Olivia Rojas, Julia Hyder, Joel Nadler, and Leticia Wiggins, and Emmy Beach, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky, Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Thanks for the folks that helped me out this week when I was out, and thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.